This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female-identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
The Guardian Leviosa.
Now on,
you do as I tell you.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Hearing, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, my name is Morning. With me today is my lovely, glorious, amazing, wonderful, with a nice purple sweater that I didn't really recognize was purple. Amazing, glorious co-host Amanda. Even with applause today. Hi, Amanda.
That was beautiful. I like those applause. They should be every time.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. How are
How's
you doing?
Going? Jinx. I am doing very well, thanks.
I'm glad.
And how are you doing today?
My brain is all out the window, which we've already established in the last like 15 minutes, 30 minutes that we were already live on Twitch. But I feel otherwise it's going great.
I'm glad
I have
to
like
hear
a
that.
no bullshit mood and stuff. That's going all fine. But yeah, today we have a really wonderful topic, I think. I don't know.
It's going to be an interesting topic.
Yes.
Because, one way or the other.
Because we already kind of spoiled each other that we probably won't agree. Well, I think we might agree in quite some few of the bits. But anyway, we're going to talk about Turning Red today, the new Pixar movie that's out now on Disney Plus.
I watched this movie on Saturday, so it's pretty fresh in my mind. And I watched it after one of my D&D friends was like, we watched Turning Red last night. It was really good, but it wasn't as good as Encanto. But everyone should still watch it. And I was like, never heard of it. Mom, there's a new Disney movie. And then we watched it.
Okay. I watched it Monday. No, yesterday. What? No, it's Wednesday today. Yesterday. I don't know when I messaged you. Sometime the last couple of days. After we talked about whether or not we should talk about it, I was like, sure. After ages. And yeah, then I watched it as well. And I didn't like it very much.
Dun, 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 dun. That's all the spoilers that I have is that Monty didn't like it. So we haven't pre-talked about this. We haven't done anything. So
yeah,
I'm intrigued. Okay. So this movie is about a young girl who is 13 and starts to read her emotions.
Yeah. And it's like basically settled in 2002 Canada. Mm-hmm. And she's, I'm not actually sure, I probably didn't pay enough attention, Chinese descent. And they live in Canada. They have a temple there and they worship the goddess, which kind of is related to red pandas. That's all. I even forgot her name. What's the main May? Maylin is the main, the 13-year-old girl, and they are like tending to the temple there. Her mother and her mother mainly. Her father is still in the picture, so it's not like they're. So the family is like all together, but the mom is like taking care of the temple. The father is taking care of the house, and May is helping her mom take care of the. It's an ancestor, not a goddess. Familial temples are different than goddess temples. Thank you, Gemma.
Yeah, I didn't know that this film was, or the film movie was set in Toronto. So like seeing my home city in a Disney Pixar film, all cartoony, it was really cool. And being I've been there. And like, oh, I've been there. It looks great as a cartoon. And just like seeing a little nods to the like downtown and even just going through Chinatown, I was like, oh, this is bringing back like really cool memories.
So is it really the city like kind of so in a way that you would say like, oh, this is like what the city looks like and stuff?
Yeah, it was pretty so cool. So accurate, actually. Like Gemma is saying in chat here, like it was so accurate. It was really wild just seeing like our city right in there. it was cool. There was so many like little things, and calling it the Sky Dome was such a, I was like, it's the Sky Dome. Yes, it is. Because it's recently, not recently, but it feels like it's been recent that it's been renamed the Rogers Center, the like big arena and or the big stadium. It's where the Blue Jays go to play baseball, and they call it the Sky Dome, which is what it was called back in 2002. Aww. And I was just like, yes, that is its name. That's its name. Look at it in all its open top glory. It's beautiful.
I love that Gemma agrees with you.
Yeah, that's really cool. Gemma, like the Sky Dome will always be the Sky Dome. Like, who actually calls it the Rogers Center? No one. We all call it the Sky Dome.
That's really cool.
Okay. So I want to know, Mani, why didn't you like it?
I feel we should just kind of preface that it's probably going to be like very spoilery here now, because so if you haven't watched it yet, maybe stop listening or something. Well, I think the reasons why I didn't really like it is like very vain, like very, very vain. I could not get on board with the animation. Like, I could not in the tiniest bit, like, I just did not like what it looked like. And I know it's a Pixar movie and everything. And it was like, and it's like, it just was the animation style just really put me off to a degree where I was like, I can't anymore. Like, it just was then I felt like, and there are a lot of things that from the feminism perspective and from the diversity perspective and from the kind of theme that they want to go for, I can totally get behind all of that. Like, I see how that's important. And you sent me an Insta story today and I'm like, yeah, that's really cool. It's really epic. And I see all of that. And I see that separately to a degree where I'm like, this is all amazing, because once again, and that's what like Disney, and despite Disney being like really hypocritical with who they support and like supporting the people who vote for the Don't Say Gay bill and stuff, which they've now like kind of pulled their money out of it, which is great. So you can bully CEOs into submission in a way. But so they have done a lot of stupid shit, obviously, but they're also really, I feel, with especially the last couple of movies, really started to be way more diverse with their films, right? So I see in this one, once again, that it's also going that way, right? Like the protagonist, like she's Chinese descent, is in Canada, all her friends are like, one is Korean, one is a Black girl. So I feel like there is more representation all around in all these movies currently, right? So I'm like really here for that. I just really didn't like the animation. And I feel like, and I know it should also hit me because I was like, well, I was a bit older, 2002, but it's also like my generation-ish kind of, because Tamagotchis and boy bands and woohoo and all of that. And I can also kind of identify with it, but also it was so fucking extra all the time. Like all this shouty and crying. And there was like, everything was so constantly. And that coming from me means a lot, because I'm like always, I know you're like looking like this, but I'm like, can we have like a like, because I feel there are always more, I don't know. It was just so much for me then. Shocking that Gemma left it, really. Yes, that's true. But because I didn't like the animation, because it was all just, I was like, I couldn't get to the point of loving it. Couldn't. That was just like watching it. And it's not going to be a movie that I'm going to rewatch like I've rewatched other movies. Like I've already rewatched Encanto, and I've watched a lot of other Disney movies. And and then, yeah. And Deb says, am I the only one who saw Moni with when they saw the main character in the first few seconds? Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, maybe that. It's also because I wasn't a 13-year-old teenager like this. Maybe it was because I was a depressed little shit at home. Maybe.
Because like when I was 13, I was pretty over the top extra. I was obsessed with Backstreet, like obsessed. I went to my first Backstreet Boy concert when I was 11 or 12, I think 12. And I screamed so hard that the woman in front of us asked me to be quiet. So like, I felt like I was that 13-year-old girl. I was like, yes, this is definitely who I am. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was also very all into all of that. Like, my entire room was full of posters of the Backstreet Boys and whatever other boy band came along at the time. The Moffats, the... Who else was there? A few of them. No, I wasn't in... I was a Backstreet Boys person. So I was... That was more of that.
Like that?
No, they were... No. No, my main obsession were the Backstreet Boys.
Same.
But... I was at the concert once, but I was never, would have never been the one who like fainted at the very front of the stadium or something. So it was always like still like we were there kind of the back singing and woohooing and stuff. Woohooing sounds like we had like a great sexy time. We didn't, but it was just like, yeah, whatever.
Sounds very Sims-esque here.
New Kids on the Block obsessed showing my age. Yeah. And I just, I don't know, maybe it's that's why I couldn't relate. And I also felt like, so much of it seemed to be triggered by anger in a way. I can't describe the, and I know because obviously a lot of it, because in, especially in Asian and Chinese culture and stuff, there is this devotion to the elder generations and to kind of don't fall out of that, don't fall out of grace in front of your parents and don't disrespect your parents and do what your parents want and stuff like that. So I see that is obviously also a point that I don't necessarily can relate to that degree. Like that doesn't mean that I lived at home for way too long. And I kind of, it took me becoming like 25 or 26 to generally question my family's or my choice of life and seeing that like, if I don't want to get married, I don't need to get married and all stuff like that. So there's a lot of tradition that I carry with me as well that came from being my parents' kid basically, but obviously not to the degree that it would be in like a don't always respect your elders and stuff like that. That wasn't something that was an issue with us, but obviously often is with like Asian heritage. And that was obviously a topic in the movie a lot because that's where a lot of the double life, let's call it, for May came about because on the one hand at home she was that daughter who was always treating her family right and trying to do right by her mom and stuff. And outside of it, she just lived this, I am going to do whatever the fuck I want kind of life. And I can see, but it still felt like a lot of it was driven by so much anger because then in the end also and because of her emotions and whenever they got the best of her, she always turned into that red panda. And she was like sometimes way more chill and they then decided to, so her family then decides that she has to put the panda back into wherever because she can't let her emotions go like that. Like she needs to be in control of her emotions like all the ancestors have before because it turns out, spoiler, that all the women in the family all turned into red pandas at some point. So they all had like this ritual on how they get the panda back and basically lock in some kind of jewelry or something so that they can continue living their life as humans and not like split between being this red panda and being like a person. And I don't know, it just felt like, why the fuck are you so angry? Like I get that a lot of it comes and you get so angry towards your parents and stuff, but so much of it was like kind of, I don't know, anger driven as well to a degree. And like all the, I don't know, some of the characters, I really like the redhead, she had like three friends and they were like the most important people to her. And because she was thinking of her friends, she kind of could control the panda then. And like the three friends were also so extra. Like one of them, I feel like never had a regular conversation. She was the Korean one, which I do appreciate. The Korean one was the first fat kid that I've ever seen a Disney movie. I was like, yay, fat representation. Woohoo. But then in the end, I just found her annoying. And the only one I really liked from her friends was the redhead and the other one, because I feel like the redhead was the one who was more starting like normal conversations with her instead of just being all something. I don't know.
Okay. I have a lot to say about what you said. Number one, I'm pretty sure the whole panda thing was a giant metaphor for menstruation, for periods and PMS and like dealing with your emotions, like as they come.
Maybe.
I also loved like that when it first came up, like, and she was so worried and everything, like, her mom showed up with all the period products and, like, was like, that was just awesome funny. To see. But also, like, I'm pretty sure that the entire thing was about periods, just, and this was a Disney way to talk about it and do it as well. So there's that. What else do you say? I'm going to read here what Lizzie said, because it's absolutely exactly what I thought. Like, you're saying about being angry and lost and confused and all of that things, like the things that you're like, it was just so over the top for me. But like, that is exactly what it is, teenager. And Liz says it's the epitome of being a teenager, which some of us don't really grow out of. And like, it hit really well. And yeah, absolutely. Like, teenagers are going through all of the emotions, all of the feelings, everything. So like, it just felt very accurate and very teenagey for me. And just like, exactly like the epitome of what it is to be an emotional, angry wreck, especially trying to push your parents' boundaries. And now I'm going to read out what Gemma says, because as usual, she's making a fantastic. Gemma says, I think it's absolutely vital to note that this is part of a multi-thousand year history of familial ancestor trait lines in Chinese culture and mythos. Like, it can't be divorced from the fact that this is a centuries old tale that has been retold in so many families and is essential to understanding the importance of animal totems in Chinese cultures or the communist revolution. So like, there's so much there with that as well. Like, in terms of that familial and ancestral lineage, which I don't personally know enough about Chinese culture and their animal totems to really like know all the ins and outs to talk about that. But
yeah,
I think like it's a really important thing to note. And in terms of her friend group, I loved them all. my favorite character of her friend group was Priya, the Indian girl. And did you notice that she was pretending to be a vampire?
I just saw that on some social media.
Because it was like my favorite thing. I was like, look at her. She's so cool. Like, she has all the coffin, like arms crossed, pretending to be in a coffin while on top of the roof and reading her vampire books and like doing the,
yeah,
getting all in there. It was great. It was so nerdy. It was so typical teenage girl. Like, I'm really obsessed with like vampire books, so I'm going to pretend to be one all the time. Little goth girl.
Maybe it's because I was like, I feel I was a weird kid, but I feel I was just different weird kid. So I just can't relate to a lot of the things. Maybe that's why it just didn't bring so much home for me. Like, it's not that I can't relate to a lot of aspects that it's touching on and that I didn't get all of that. And I feel like, yeah, that's like relatable, but equally maybe not as much relatable for me. I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm just like, about it. And it's, but then in the end, it's also not true, because Encanto is also not something that I could massively relate to, but I liked it way more. So I just can't put my finger on. It was also really, I can't, and just need to say, like, I didn't like the animation. Like, mm-hmm. I liked it to a degree. Well, I liked bits of it, but then the general vibe of the animation I didn't at all like. And I can't even put my finger on it exactly what it was, but just something that really put me off. I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. I really liked the animation. I thought that it was, I just really liked the way it was. And I also really loved the overprotectiveness of Ming, Malin's mom, who would just like show up at school, hide behind trees, get like just being there all the time, trying to put herself in the narrative, be like, what is going on in my daughter's life? Because thankfully my parents were quite respectful of my privacy, but I had friends' parents who were like all mine up in were their
my mom
like,
wasn't at all
everything showing up at school, and
my mom still showed up at my work when I was like past 20 and just inserted herself into shit and in general. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great point that Gemma is also making. Gemma, do you just want to be like a third co-host here? she says the animation was nostalgic of 2000s Canadian animation. It wasn't very crisp. It was full of bold colors and it was exaggerated. And you're right. It looks like TV that we watched then. And that's probably why I really like the animation as well, because of that nostalgia factor. It's like, this is pretty cool.
But maybe that's also partly part of it, because we already established how different like TV culture in North America was back in our days. Mm-hmm.
especially Canadian media.
Yeah, when, especially Canadian media.
My goodness, I actually totally forgot about this when I read it the other day. But back in like the 90s and early 2000s, a specific percentage of media shown in school had to be Canadian. And everyone was always like, oh, no, not another Canadian movie, because it was so bad, like stereotypically so bad. But it was like so they actually put it into legislation that to preserve Canadian culture, we had to actually watch and read it and learn about it.
Lula says, I think also, though, it's not a lack of respect to a child's privacy, but more a sense of wanting the best for the child all the time. Yes, but as someone whose mother... It's really difficult to have a mother who is not showing you boundaries. And then even if it comes out of love for the kid, because then you raise a kid who doesn't understand how boundaries work and who has really hard time to. And I feel it's just really difficult. Maybe that's also what kind of triggered me a bit. It's because watching it back, because when you're a kid, you don't realize that, right? You don't realize that your parent is crossing a boundary that other kids or other parents have towards their children. And I feel it's just really difficult to then say, yes, it comes out of love. Of course it comes out of fucking love. I know that my mother loved me, but that doesn't help me now as an almost 40-year-old woman to establish and make it possible and able to create like proper and healthy boundaries in your life. Because if your mother is getting angry at you for closing the door with a lock because you don't want her to secretly clean your apartment while you're at work, and she's getting upset and making herself the victim from it, then it's just not something that's really fun, right? So I feel like, and while I have like a lot of this embarrassment stuff that I'm like, there's literally almost nothing that I'm embarrassed about because my mom already embarrassed me because of something anyway. So I just have like, but that's why I feel like, yes, it all comes from a place of love, but it's at the same time, it's not healthy to put your child in a situation like this. Oh yeah, my mom secretly cleaned my apartment while I wasn't there because she decided it was too dirty, so she cleaned it while I was gone. And I was over 20 by the time because I lived at home until I was 24. And even though I started to lock the door and took the key away with me, she just got really upset with me because I locked it. Exactly. A lack of privacy is a form of control. Yeah. So that's just... And again, I see that all of this is also has a cultural aspect to it as well, right? Because it's getting even more difficult if you have this, even if you have this aspect of don't hurt your elders and always show respect to your elders and stuff. I mean, I called my mom an asshole. Did that help? No, we called each other stupid bitches at the same time. So it was like we had a different conversation going on. But yes, what Lula says, common in like Chinese or general some other Asian cultures as well, where the respect your elders is like puts an additional hurdle between formulating your boundaries because you can't kind of formulate your boundaries because you don't want to respect your elders as well. So it just makes it even more difficult. And I see that, and it's still I'm 100% not the right person to judge whether or not it's accurate kind of representation how it's been done, and I assume it is, but again, like this the situation with bringing the pets to school and stuff, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, all things. You know, I think I really like that they showed this in a film, and that it's bringing up discussion about control and boundaries and overprotected parents and pushing those boundaries, and that it's actually those boundaries. Like I've seen quite a lot of backlash about people saying, oh my God, I've seen so much backlash about this. And just one of them
because people say it's just another left-wing Disney movie about disrespecting your parents and shit.
Yeah, there's that argument. There's the whole like, oh my God, I wish that somebody had told me that it was about periods so that I could not watch it with my sons. And I'm just like, one of the arguments is that about it being left-wing propaganda, well, about like, respecting your parents.
2 seconds, like, you're breaking up. You're moving again. Yes.
Okay. What did I just say?
It's not left-wing propaganda from Disney for...
Right, about disrespecting your parents. Like, this is what so many teenagers go through. Like, so many teenagers want to push the boundaries, and like, it's not left-wing propaganda by saying like, actually it's healthy and it's normal to do that. Like, it's totally fine. And they've done it in a really fun kind of way. I think that it was, it's definitely bringing up the topic for a lot of people now, and having conversations that I think people may have shied away from before.
Just thinking while we're talking about it, I was thinking, it's also, the movie's also set in 2002, right? A lot has happened since 2002. I feel like maybe it seems like such a break, like such something so drastic, because obviously like the people that this movie is about are parents now, right? So it's less, and they, a lot of them hopefully already kind of learned that parenting is not about emitting dominance and like creating dominance and shit by being super overprotective, but a lot of it is about conversation and have the kids try themselves out. So maybe it just seems so extra because a lot of it has already changed or is changing to a degree.
Maybe.
And maybe that's more of a story of our childhood when things were, and that's why it feels a bit kind of off to a degree now, and seems so over the top. Well, whereas it wasn't 20 years ago.
Sure. And I love what Marcus said as well. He said, I love the thought that Disney shouldn't make movies where children question their parents, because Disney used to make movies only about evil step-parents. It's true. Like that door is swinging the other way now. And parents are like, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
But yes, Gemma, and Gemma makes another great point about it being in that weird kind of limbo time period between the modern internet age and the digital shift. Like Y2K has happened and people are trying to learn how to be like an existing on the internet and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a hard, especially in Canada at that time, it was hard to be like in that mid digital era. Like some of my friends had cell phones in 2000, but I didn't. And like, it was that shift. And like, it was weird being a Canadian in the late 90s and early 2000s. And I say that as somebody who lived in the United States for a few years at the end of the 90s. They were definitely more culturally and digitally advanced than Canada was at the time. So like moving back, and it was like reliving those kind of early tech years again. It was like so bizarre.
Yeah. I feel our generation is a weird generation. Like based on so many, like, and I feel probably every generation says it about themselves, right? And it's not that the younger generations have it like so many things so much easier or something. I just feel like, yes, it's really weird. Like, sorry, I just had to laugh because of Marcus. Because Marcus said, it used to be weird being a Canadian. Have you come to terms with being a Canadian since? I know it can be a shock to some. but yeah, like we live in this bracket of our parents being a generation that made it really easy to have living to a degree. You know what I mean? Like so many of them had, obviously most of them had built a house and bought and have like property and shit. Mm-hmm. And our generation now is in that gap of how the fuck are we supposed to afford any of that, right? Mm-hmm. Without being like, I don't know, indebted for the last, for all your life. And then when you're American, you're indebted your entire life anyway. And then not that it's easier for the newer generation, but then the nobody's asking anything to that degree of them anymore. You know what I mean? Because it, like, everybody accepts that the younger generation can't afford anything anymore anyway. But our generation is still like kind of trapped or like attached to this, where you're like, your life is only worth something if you have a house and a good job and a family and whatever. And just feel as it's really a weird gap that the 90s, 80s, 90s babies are in somehow, I feel like.
Yep. No, it's definitely a thing. It's definitely a generational thing. And I just want to say thanks, Gemma, for understanding my little Canadian rant there. She says 1,000% agree. I think the time I grew up was one of the harsh distinctions in Canada, being different than the US while also trying so hard to just be like the States. And that's part of why Gemma's identity as a Canadian was so hardwired. And it's true. Like any Canadian that I met traveling like mid 2000s was hardcore Canadian. Like it was 100%, 1,000, 1 million percent the identity, like singing Canadian propaganda songs on a bus in Scotland.
Propaganda like, songs? Wow.
No, they weren't propaganda songs. They were funny parody songs. Yeah, we were the generation taught to worship the maple leaf, and we did. And there's a part of me that still does, despite all the problems, because of what we were hard. Like, we were, it was just hard. It was like really beat into us that we were Canadian. We were proud to be Canadian. And like I said, we had like Canadian conscripted media that we had to consume a certain percentage of Canadian media every single year.
What happened during those years that Canada felt this hard necessity to be to distinguish themselves from the US? Was there
The digital media, the internet, the more easy access to American culture, television, media, and then like learning about the rest of the world as well.
Wild.
Yeah. Like there was a big, 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 big push like to be
interesting,
very proud to be Canadian.
Gemma says, I can't explain. I have a degree in Canadian studies, but it's too complex for this podcast.
Well, Gemma, tell me, did I hit any of the points? maybe we continue that conversation later. Back to turning red, because that totally went off on a little Canadiana tangent, which I kind of loved, not gonna lie. I want to talk about how much distress people seem to have about the fact that they talk about period, because there has been so much backlash on the internet. It's almost all that I have seen is backlash about talking about period.
Really?
Yes. Debs shared this link with me this morning. I'm going to drop it in chat here and I'll put it in the show notes as well. It's a Twitter thread, and from like some Facebook group, mom says, I watched Turning Red with my boys this weekend, boys aged 9 and 13. They had tons of questions regarding girls and their periods. And then like a sad, discouraged face. I wish there had been a warning before watching it. Anyone else? Like, okay, number one, like as if we need a warning to talk about period. This is like not the first thread that I have seen about people like complaining about it being like talking about periods. Like I personally think it's fantastic that Disney is showing this, because 50% of the population, rough figures, are gonna have their period at one point in their life.
Also, why the fuck should anybody need to be forced to hide something that's just like happening to a lot of the population at least once a month?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You're lucky like me, you just don't have it for years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's unrelated. It's probably not called lucky, but it's kind of practical at least.
Yeah. And anyways, it's just been like so much confusion, shame, disgust about the fact that it's talking about periods and how it's bringing up uncomfortable conversations with their kids. And like, it's not shameful to have a period. It's not shameful to talk about it. I actually read, I don't know where I read it, but it was a story about a girl. It was from a teacher. It must have been on Twitter. It was a story from a teacher who said that one of her students held up a tampon, to ask to go to the bathroom. She just like held her tampon up and like shook it. And the teacher like nodded at her, and the girl got up and left. And one of the boys just piped up and was like, did she just hold up her tampon to ask to go to the bathroom? And the teacher was like, yeah. You've got a problem with that? And the guy was like, no, that's awesome. That was really cool. Just like owning that part. And I was like, that's awesome that kid was just like, I think that's an awesome thing that she did, because like it's starting to reduce that stigma around periods, because like it was shameful. Like I was like, not shameful, but I was embarrassed about it. Whereas like, why?
There are so many things, like there are like so many things attached to that, right? Number one, people don't talk about the periods. How can people even understand their own bodies, right? And I feel it's important for everyone who has periods, man or woman, right, to be like, to understand what the fuck is going on, right? And if you don't speak about it, you have people hiding number one, not knowing how to deal with the fact when it happens, right? Because they don't haven't ever talked about it. So how the fuck do they know what they're supposed to do? Because you don't, you all you see is the fucking always ad on the TV where there is like some blue weird fucking liquid running into it, and then all of a sudden nothing happens. Spoiler alert, that's not how it goes. And then on the other side, it's like, I had friends whose parents never talked with them about it. Not that I can remember how I had the conversation, but they never talked with their parents about it. They were too scared to talk, to get go to their parents when it actually happened. And then it ended up that they were hiding their pads under the bed from their parents because there was never a conversation about it. And I'm like, it's fucking ridiculous. You can't grow up and not know about your period and what that entails, right? And mm-hmm. and what that means for the body and for your fertility and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So
I think that there is a lot of destigmatization going on about it. Like there's a lot more education, even like I'm seeing even in like business groups that I'm in, people are talking about how like to work with your cycles and use your cycles like to be a better entrepreneur and a better business person. So like even middle-aged women are getting more open about talking about something that, you know, the older generation to us, like is still learning and everything, and learning to be more open. And there was one thing in particular in response to this thread. And I was just like, this is why we need to talk about it. So one of the responses said, a friend had a boyfriend who at 26 didn't know women bled. He thought a period was a woman laying an egg like a chicken and that the pad was to catch it so it didn't break. And he dumped his girlfriend in disgust when he found out the truth. So
maybe he watched a video with chickens and that's what he thought happened.
This is why it's important to talk about periods and how they happen.
To be honest, one of my ex-boyfriends wasn't very generally aware of how about a lot of things work. And I was just like, excuse me? How the fuck do you not know that?
Yeah. I mean, like, I remember when the first time I ever talked to a friend of mine about like a maxi pad.
I also would prefer to lay an egg, Sunny.
Depends how big an egg. That might hurt too.
I mean, if it's not bigger, like, never mind. I'm not going to.
If it's like the size of a chicken egg, it might just pop out of there. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah, Gemma, yes. He already was one then. So didn't know a lot about that.
But yeah, like one of the first times that I ever found out about
But his father was a doctor, Gemma. So I feel like he was a dentist, but in essence, you know, there should have been some kind of information about this.
Maybe.
And I didn't, saw what Frasley read. I didn't clock that they said only women bled.
I didn't either. I'm not saying it wasn't in there, but I didn't clock it. It was just because they didn't really talk about periods except for that one moment when Ming was bringing in all the period products into the
I love it with the basket and everything.
It was fantastic. It was like, because that's what you need, like that's what every little, like
I don't actually think I ever figured out what the best thing to do is, to be honest, but then again I don't ever guess it, so
but yeah, like I just think it's really important to talk about it and destigmatize it, and like it's gonna happen to
I remember once in school, I painted tampons red and then we hung it on the wall. And then my Latin teacher, who was also a religion teacher, didn't approve of it. In hindsight, it makes sense why I didn't approve of it.
That's why I'm curious why that was your art. I kind of love it, but also
I don't remember. Okay. I don't remember why I did it. I just remember that I even painted the beginning and stuff, and it's all, and then I hang them, like a couple of them. It was not only one, it was a couple. I really don't remember why I did it.
I love that. Like, and why not, right? Like just more tampon art. Sure, why not?
Or when men ask if we can just hold it in. Yes. Dude, I wish I would hold it in, because honestly, then it's not like when you sneeze and you feel like you just pissed yourself all over or something.
Yeah,
but anyway,
for sure. No, honestly, like I've seen so many stories coming out the past few days about like talking about periods and how like men just don't seem to understand that what actually happens with a period, and that I think that there's that kind of ties into why a lot of male teachers like won't let you go to your bathroom, won't let you go to the bathroom if you're on your period, because they think you can just like actually hold it in. Like that's not how it works. And that's why they won't let you.
If I could hold it in, there would have been far fewer unintentional abstract panty masterpieces in my life. Holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. Just always put the towel underneath your bed when you go to bed, because fuck knows, after 8 hours lying flat on your back, it's just going every fucking where.
Mm-hmm. And like, okay, so by 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, when you get your period, like you already know how to like get blood out of sheets, get blood
yeah,
out
Gemma.
Of... same Gemma. White hole still terrify me. And towels. I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry. That was a nice towel.
I know. Like, who the fuck thought that's a great idea? Because that's like the worst fucking towel to give anyone. Like hand out white towels. And even if you had like sex with someone or something, and then you wash your bits afterwards, not everything is always like transparent and invisible mm-hmm. and shit like that. So what mm-hmm. the fuck? Like, why the fuck would anyone need a white fucking towel all the time?
Yeah. I'm like, no thanks. Like, this is a bad, bad time. what was I saying before we started talking about white towels? Oh yeah. By when you get your period, when like you learn to like get blood out of sheets, get blood out of knickers, like you learn how to do that. Did you just throw them out? Because I cleaned them.
I put them in the washing machine.
Oh, that didn't always get the blood out. There's always some kind anyways. I learned really early on how to like remove blood from fabrics and like dealing like so like you're dealing with that, you're dealing with cramps, you're dealing with like mood swings, you're dealing with all of this stuff. And these parents are saying like, oh, my little boys don't need to learn this stuff. It's like
they do. They really do.
Yeah, they really do. We're going to have another generation of people with no empathy.
Also, I feel like if there would be more education and more. Well, more talk about it, then there would be more understanding about general moods and stuff. Mm. Exactly. Your little boys may have girlfriends or daughters or whatever.
So it's really important that we do these conversations and we just like explain to all of the little kids what's going to happen.
Exactly. Gemma says everybody needs to learn how all sorts of bodies work, because gender and bodies shift over time and we need to just accept that human biology is complex and varied. Yes, 100%. And despite like even science, right, also needs to focus on the different kinds of people and being able to not just do science on men and then extrapolate mm-hmm. on women.
What's the quote? Women are not little men.
Yeah.
Biology and everything.
Yeah.
And then
I mean, even the fact that we know that heart. Even the fact that we know that heart attacks like show differently in men and women, just like so important, because it's not always comes with a moment like they show in all of the TV. That's why I just love Grey's Anatomy, right? Because they had like an entire episode of how Bailey had a heart attack and she had to really advocate for how she has a heart attack right now, because she's a doctor and she knows that women's heart attacks work differently than like men's heart attacks, and she knows she's having a heart attack right now. So don't let her start about Grey's Anatomy. I'm gonna stop now, sorry.
I do want to talk as well about the director of this mm-hmm. because this is Pixar's first feature that has been solely directed by a woman.
I love that.
Yeah, her name is Domi Shi, and she is the first woman in the studio's 36-year history with that solo distinction. So she started back at Pixar in storyboarding back in 2011.
Nice.
And she was only 22. She was there as a staff artist, worked on the Inside Out and Incredibles 2. In 2018, she directed, she was the first woman to direct a Pixar short called Bao, which was about a dumpling that came to life.
Oh, I saw that one. It's so cute.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I need to. I haven't seen a lot of the shorts. And she won an Oscar for it. And that put her on course to break a glass ceiling at Pixar.
Nice.
So with Turning Red, it's, where is it? It's a side of teen, she says, it's a side of teen girls that you never get to see. We are just as awkward and sweaty and lusty excited as any boy. Because that was the other thing in this. There was the like 13-year-old teenage horniness, like being like loving on the boys and drawing your like your fanfic with your crush. Like I
thought
draw,
you were gonna
like,
relate to that heart. Yeah.
Like, yes. Like yes. There was so much in there.
Yeah.
Like it was.
You're frozen 2 seconds now.
Now it hit so many good things.
Yeah.
Like, was it my favorite Pixar film I've ever seen? No. But it was great. And quote, Lizzie just said the quote, I like boys and I like to gyrate. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And Gemma says, like, if she doesn't mind me sharing, like, she started writing erotica when she was 12. So feeling super seen by the lusty fan art. Yeah. And Frasley was curious, like, how far are they going to go there? And they tastefully show teen lust and hormones. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I think that this was that it touched on so many important, important points. And I liked it. I did like it.
Yeah.
Like, I see that you didn't.
No, it's like, it's fine. It's not that I was like, this is the worst movie ever or whatever. And I totally acknowledge that the reasons why I didn't like it are like super vain. Like, it's not, but at the same time, I feel like I can also dislike stuff for other reasons than the content.
Sure.
So, yeah. For as I said, because as a teen, I was horny as fuck. I wasn't. No. Yeah. I just felt the need to get it over with because everybody was starting to get it. And I feel like I need to as well. But I don't think I was like super horny.
Fair enough.
Explains a lot nowadays.
Yeah. And like Gemma says, like, I don't think everyone needs to like everything. I was really just curious why you didn't, because
yeah,
that was like,
but then then I have a question though. If the panda is an equivalent of, maybe that's also something I missed, of periods, why is Ming's or May's mom's panda so huge?
Well, she must be a you know what coming up to her period.
I don't know.
Metaphors be metaphoring.
Yeah, maybe. Liz says, I'm new to Pixar. All the Pixar films I've seen have hit me hard. This was another wonderful example of a film showing me it's okay to have feelings, even if the people in my life don't know how to acknowledge them. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Those are all things totally see. Like, and then I also see that the... And I totally agree that it's important to have it. And at the same time, I'm not sure if that's the way I would have liked it. But also because of the typical asshole critic, I feel like I can't give you a better an example of how I would have wanted it differently as well. So I'm just fine. Being an asshole here.
No, not at all. Like, you don't need... I was just curious what like why you didn't like it. Like,
yeah,
obviously totally fine that you didn't like it. I was just curious why.
Yeah.
Allowed to know.
It's true.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to watch it again because just to check if I might have like, because I totally acknowledge that I potentially also missed some bit. So maybe I will just watch it again for the sake of it because maybe it's a slow burner for me. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows?
I would be interested if you do watch it again, what your thoughts are on if they've changed or if they're, and like try to put yourself in like 13, 14, 15-year-old eyes. Now that you understand what it was, know a little bit more.
Maybe. Yeah. Marcus says, it's very adult of me. When I see something I don't like, I'm more like, thank fuck I never have to see it again. Well, it's not that I, like, if there's something I really hate, then I'm definitely not going to watch it again. Like, I'm not going to, I don't have time for bullshit anymore in my life. I'm just like, no, fuck that. But at the same time, I see a bunch of things that I've really enjoyed. And it's not that I had, like, the worst fucking time of my life watching it. But it's not usually one that I would be like, oh, this was so great. I have to watch it again tomorrow. Like Into the Spider-Verse verse. Absolute favorite movie of all fucking times. Would watch probably every fucking day because it's the best fucking movie ever made. It's not like that for me. So, yeah. And I just watched Into the Spider-Verse again recently and I just can't believe how good it is every single time. I just think, I watch it again. Now it's probably won't hit me like it usually hits me. Every time hits me every on time. The spot. Best fucking movie ever. Never mind. Fair enough. But yeah, turning red is what we talked about.
It is what we talked about. And I think that my final thoughts are talk about periods and feel your feelings.
Yes, I subscribe to that.
Yes.
I mean, also, if you don't feel your feelings, they will catch up with you anyway, because they always do. And it's just a bullshit that society tells us that if you don't feel your feelings, they go away. They never go away. They just bottle up and they just come out at really, really, really bad times. And then you're just going to suffer even more. And it's going to take you years to get rid of them or like deal with them, because you don't want to get rid of them. You want to feel them. And you have to feel them eventually. So
may as well feel them as they come.
Exactly. Yeah. Way healthier to feel them as they come. Way healthier to feel the mystic come. Jesus Christ.
So yeah. Do you have any other thoughts on turning red?
No.
Okay. If listener, you have any further thoughts, think that we're full of shit, love it, hate it, whatever. Let us know in the comments of the episode on social media, send us an email, join us in Discord, whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening and see you next time with another amazing episode of Geek Herring.
Bye.
Bye.
If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.